Greetings, it's Dr. Burnett, publishing pusher, the all-in-body place of encouragement, cultural empowerment. Weekly, she'll engage conversations with entrepreneurs and creatives. And these insightful interviews are designed to help us build our businesses, respective brands, ourselves, and to hopefully propel us to that next level of greatness. Big Boss. So with no time to waste time, it's officially go time.
Hi, everyone. It's a new week. Dr. Annette, publishing pusher here. I want to remind everyone that as a publishing pusher, I do have a publishing company. And being a publisher, I get the opportunity to speak to some fantastic people. I get to speak to people who have been many places, done many things, been exposed to too many things sometimes. But it's just wonderful when they are able to put their stories, their life experiences into a resource that they can share with the world. I have this wonderful model called S3. And what S3 says, if you don't show up, people don't know you exist. If you don't speak out, people don't know you have something to say. And if you don't share it, people don't know what's in your toolbox. So I am excited today that I have Albert Grieve with me. And he is a wonderful author. But before we get ready to talk about him as an author, I want him to greet you.
Hello, I appreciate the opportunity to be here. Thank you so much.
And let me tell you, I was blessed to work with Albert for about 8, 9 months, 10 months, working on his book. I love the fact that he wasn't in a hurry to get it done, even though he knew it was going to get done. And I know this is one of the biggest issues that people have sometimes. Oh, Dr. Annette, I have this story I've got to get out. And then we get to talking and I said, well, how long have you been thinking about this? Oh, I've been thinking about it for 20 years. So if you've been thinking about it for 20 years, why do you think you're going to come to Dr. Annette and we're going to get it done in 30 days? So we want to make sure that we take our time, go through the process, and that we get it right. So today we're going to talk about, Albert, could you show your book? Absolutely. We're going to talk about Albert's book, The Fear to Persevere, A Practitioner's Review, Surviving Abuse and Domestic Violence. Powerful book. Easy read. I've read it several times, not just as a publisher, but just sat down and took the time to read through it. Why? Because I found some great nuggets that I can share with some of my clients as I am working with them and coaching them through their life issues as well. So, Albert, you decided to write this book. What inspired you to write this book or to even want to write a book?
Actually, before I even go there, I just have to underscore the idea of having this story that you want to get out for a couple decades, because that was totally me. And I wasn't done with the book when I engaged your services, but by engaging your services, it forced me to get my butt in gear and get done, because part of my background, some of my healing journey, because I'm a former foster youth. I grew up in domestic violence and abuse. My father was an angry and abusive alcoholic, and he had OCD. And so nothing was ever good enough. And I got in trouble for that all the time. So one of the side effects as an adult is I still strive for perfection. And so I probably never would have put out the book if I hadn't worked with you, because I keep tweaking it, changing it, and trying to create some product that wasn't necessarily possible. But through working with you, I think I created a magnificent product that can help prevent people from going through what I went through, to help society at large realize that there are these major issues out there relating to domestic violence and child abuse that they may not understand the depths and the nuances of trauma. And this will hopefully open their eyes and motivate them into taking some more action, because there's a lot of people that want to help, but they don't even know where to start. And then toward the practitioners and stuff, practitioners really demonstrating these were the mistakes that were made, the ones that we could prevent that could quite literally, as you know, in my book, save lives. Like, people would be alive if we didn't make some of these mistakes. And Then also the people like myself, letting them know that there is a light at the end of the tunnel and you can make it through. And you're going to have scars. They're going to fade. They're always going to be there. But you can make it through and become stronger on the other end.
You know, I love that. You can make it through. You're going to get stronger. We don't, you know, listen, if we got to choose what went wrong in our lives, we would never choose anything to go wrong. That's just the reality of it. And unfortunately, as we are in this world and we get exposed to people, we, you know, sometimes the outcomes aren't necessarily that good. But something you said, Albert, you don't know. People don't know. And I think it's so true. You don't know what you don't know until you get exposed to someone who does know.
Yeah, that's so true. There are a lot of people, especially in this field, and I mean that really liberally. I'm talking about school teachers, therapists, social workers, investigators. There's a lot of people that intersect with basically social relations, right? Domestic partnership relationships. I mean, that's family, that's siblings, that's brothers, that's mom, that's dad, that's spouse. There are so many people that are so well-intentioned, but they don't have that lived experience. And what I wanted this book to be was without having them have that lived experience, give them something palpable so they can understand, so they can connect and they can relate and really get it on a deeper level. Especially like, for instance, someone that's in the thick of domestic violence, they will see someone as an outsider. If they don't get it, they're not gonna open up, they're not gonna connect with you, and you're not gonna be able to reach them, even if you really want to. So I really want this to be palpable, but not too much. You know, I want to walk up to that cliff and then stay right there, you know, that razor's edge.
Yeah, and I think you did a really good job to it. And when I look at your primary title of your book, The Fear to Persevere, speak to that part of your title right there, because that kind of did something to my arm when I read it, like the fear. But I got to keep going.
Yeah. So there is a very deep meaning to the title that I probably won't share. But there are some more superficial things and that people could relate to that, you know, in society, we always talk about being strong, especially masculine, you know, like I'm not afraid of anything, whatever. But to really get you to walk in the shoes, understand that fear can be a very motivating factor and fear can help protect you. Right. I wanted to layer in the messaging. I mean, even with the image, there are so many things in that particular image. If you look at the shadow and how it doesn't follow me, there's a lot of messaging that I want to put in. I want to put it, I want it to be something that someone could read again and again and again to get something else. So if the title is off-putting, then that's why you need to pick it up and read it. Like if you don't understand the title at a bare minimum, then you're not even there yet. And I want to bring you along and I want to give you that information. And it's just be able to present that other perspective. So I didn't want to create a title that everyone just jumps onto. I wanted you to be started from the very beginning, starting with the title. And if you don't get it, then you need to open up so you can understand.
Yeah. And I think it's a great title because everybody walks in fear at some point in their life. It just may be more massive based on the situation that we were exposed to, but the ability to continue and move forward, even with that fear that's a real thing that people have to understand. And I'm sure, tell them a little, tell them about what you do as your profession and how this ties into it.
So I do a lot of training, especially with Missouri Office of Prosecuting Services, but for other conferences and entities and agencies as well, where I'm trying to train people that work in the field, from victim advocates to social workers, juvenile office, law enforcement, trying to demonstrate the nuances of determining the dominant aggressor, how to intervene, how to work with children when they don't want to disclose, when they're dealing with trauma. I also am an attorney, and so I practice as a guardian ad litem. So I go to court and I represent what a child needs. May not advocate for what they want as much, but I advocate for what they need. And with my background, I've noticed that I feel like I'm given more weight in the courtroom because I have that lived experience. I watch a lot of cases where all the parties get through talking, and then one of the last people the judge goes to is a guardian ad litem. But when I don't have a huge caseload, but when I go to court, I'm usually one of the first ones that are called on. And I've got some motions granted that I didn't think would be granted because they know and respect how I engage with the kids and how I get to really connect with them on a deeper level. I don't just see the kids. You know, there's a lot of stuff I do in the shadows to inform my positions for a family support team meeting or to appear in court. So I advocate for kids real life that were like me in foster care as a guardian ad litem. I've authored a few of these books, and I try to do a lot of advocacy through social media, creating awareness, talking about adverse childhood experiences, which are ACEs, and just generally trying to make, you know, people that have gone through my situation, trying to create a path for them to go forward so we can help them get into a better place.
Well, you know, as I read your story, I said to myself, girl, you thought you went through something? So, you know, there somebody always has, as we would say, a worse story than you have. But the point is to look at them and to see that they were still able to continue forward. And that's that perseverance that Albert talks about on his
I do book. Want to say something with yes. that. I personally try not to compare. I'm fortunate. I'm lucky. Statistically speaking, I shouldn't be here today. I should be homeless, incarcerated, self-medicating, perpetrating. And so it's important to acknowledge that I'm one of the fortunate people. And so that's why I kind of feel like it's my duty to speak up for those who cannot, to speak for the silence. Actually, that had been my working title, Silent Victims. And this was going to be the subtitle, but I switched it. Because there's, you know, you see so much stuff on Break the Silence, but we still have no idea the depths of this type of abuse that goes on, be it in religious areas or youth groups or schools, gymnastics, all these various different things. But it's also important to not compare because you don't know where someone is at mentally and physically. And so what may seem like a 4 to you may be a 10 for them. And so abuse, no matter the degree, is wrong, no matter what. But it's important to understand that it impacts people differently. You know, for some people, they may be frozen in their spot, and some people, they may take it in stride. It's also important to know that it hits them at different times. So they may appear to be doing well and thriving, and then one day it just hits them like a ton of bricks. So I try not to compare. It doesn't matter if you have an A score of 2 or on the new scale, 13 out of 13. You know, it impacts everyone differently. We need to be mindful and respectful for that.
Yeah, I think that's great. And everybody's going through something, as I said, may just not be the same magnitude. So, Albert, since you mentioned what you have gone through, do you think that this has really helped you to build the background and cultural heritage that you have as you go forward connecting in your profession?
No, absolutely. It gives you a different audience as far as what they can receive when they know you've gone through certain things. Likewise, I'm learning I can bring something different to people who aren't necessarily practitioners but have gone through these types of lived experiences. There are a lot of people that go through this and they're mad at the world, and I get it, and it's okay to be angry, but to be able to wear different hats and be a litigator for social services or a guard ad litem in court to see all the different angles and stuff, it really helps me with trying to find a path forward, because we could just sit here and complain all day long, but it doesn't really do anything. So for instance, I can talk to people who have gone through my types of experience and say that it's important to release the toxicity, to get it out, even if that's just writing it down on a piece of paper or something. But then once you get past that, to create that dialogue. So it doesn't have to be therapy or something, but to converse with someone to start your healing journey and acknowledging that you've been harmed. I mean, you've suffered trauma. And so there's some healing that actually has to go on. But it's through that dialogue that's really powerful, because you can start to see things in your past from a different light. And it informs how you act today. So you could choose what you do as you engage with people and move forward. So I think it really is helpful to really see all sides of it and have all of that experience, which again makes me kind of uniquely positioned to share this in the book. And then something else, just to show that I've been through it, is including the records. That was huge to me, is to actually get my social services records, which I incorporated throughout. So I'm not just telling my story. I live in the state of Missouri. It's the show me state. I'm also showing what I went through. I can back it up. And I think that's that litigious mindset, like having me an attorney, like I can't just tell something that's hearsay, right? You know, as far as in court, but actually having the documents, the evidentiary stuff to back it up is very important to me.
Albert, did you see your book, as you've been writing through the years and pulling pieces together, now that it's together, do you see it as a part of your healing process?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And just since engaging with you, I've grown tremendously on that front, because I had to get through some very difficult things and share stuff that I didn't want to talk about, stuff that I'm not proud of. There's that fear caused me to do a lot of things that I'm not proud of as a child. And it's those things that are wrapped in guilt that had prevented me from disclosing. You get in these types of situations, not only are you scared because the batterer is threatening you and you fear what they may do, but for self-preservation, you may do things that you're not proud of that further prevents you from disclosing. So writing this book, a tremendous amount of disclosure occurred, obviously. And every time I shared, like back when I first started speaking at like older youth groups and youth summits and stuff, where I'm just talking 10 or 15 minutes, every time I disclosed and the world kept turning, I got more comfortable sharing more. And I think that's an important message to communicate to people that are going through these types of things. That's the releasing of toxicity. So yes, this book has helped me heal tremendously. And I hope it will help others to do the same.
Healing is a part of our growth. It's available to us. The question is, do we really want it? Because everybody doesn't, they say it, but everybody doesn't necessarily want to do the work for it. Because I'm sure, Albert, that it has taken work for you to move through this process.
Absolutely. It's kind of like everyone would love to be like stand on top of a podium somewhere, like say running a marathon, but then to put in the work to train for that marathon and stand up. But we should, in the same way we approach like these physical activities like sports and stuff, we should put in the same work for our mental health. And it is rewarding because through that process, I can be a better dad, and I could be a better husband to my wife. Like my story, and it's in the book, but like I almost didn't graduate high school, but my oldest son just committed to Dartmouth University, which is an Ivy League institution. And that was really important for me because I didn't want him people to just see him as like this amazing athlete. But he's also a scholar. He's very smart. He's very creative. He's very artistic. He's so many different things. And being able to heal myself, I've been able to create the environment for him to thrive and just go beyond my wildest dreams.
So let me ask you a question about forgiveness. How important is forgiveness in us moving forward when we've been wronged?
So I don't have the answer to everything.
Okay, so
I want to tackle it. Because I'm probably not going to give the answer you want. I haven't forgiven my father, and I don't
okay.
think I ever will. But I'm not angry at him.
Okay.
So like being angry and all that toxicity does nothing to change the past. And so people ask me about it. Like, what do you want to happen? I could care less about him. Like, I don't waste any emotional capital on my father whatsoever. I will say I've forgiven my mom though. And the reason why I say that is, again, when you're in these types of situations, you may be forced to do things you don't like. So just trigger warning. My sister's story is hers to share, but like for instance, my mom, so by trigger warning, I mean I may say something that serves as a trigger for something you or someone you know may have experienced. If you need to exercise self-care, please do so. Sorry, that's that trauma informed part of me. Have to say that. My mom gave me some of the worst beatings. My mom also dressed up my older sister and presented her to my father to have sexual relations. And my siblings and I forgive my mom because we don't see it as her. We understand that she was forced to make hard decisions. I saw the aftermath of when she reached out to the authorities and my father would use and weaponize her mental health, and she'd be placed in a mental institution until she recanted. And on some of these days, she just didn't want to go through all that. And so she thought maybe if I appease this narcissistic abuser this one time, maybe it'll be okay. But then living through those one-time experiences kind of sucks. So I do forgive my mom because I can see that she wasn't in control. She wasn't in the driver's seat. And any anger I have is really directed toward not society and in general as far as anger, but like repackaging it toward advocacy, trying to increase societal awareness so we can make it like this is what it looks like. So when you see someone standing on the corner, don't be so quick to judge why they're homeless because you haven't walked a mile in their shoes. And so for my mom, yes, forgiveness. For my father, no, I don't know if I'll ever get there, but I'm not angry. I'm not angry. And getting past angry, you know, being angry all the time was very important in my healing. Sorry, long-winded answer, I know.
No. That's good. And I didn't have any specific answer that I wanted from you because, you know, the reality is how each person processes their situation is not going to be the same, but it's at least good for someone who maybe hasn't forgiven to know that they still don't have to wallow in that particular thing. And that, I believe that's what you were saying. You know, I've made myself strong through it, but I'm just not focused on that person.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm not going to waste my emotional capital whatsoever. Obviously I'm not going to forget. You can't, you know, something I talked about in one of the chapters is to try to get people to understand what it's like to live with this trauma would be reading this book, you know, once a month for the rest of your life, but it still is different because when you're done, you can close the book and walk away. But for me, the image is still play on repeat, streaming constantly in my mind. And so it's very difficult. So that's why I work so hard toward prevention because it's really hard once it's happened, you can't unring that bell. But if I can prevent the bell from being rung in the first place, then it gives some meaning to what I've went through.
So having gone through everything that you've gone through, as well as what you do in your profession, working with LITM, being a lawyer, being an advocate, what do or how can someone or a parent or someone who's seeing something or hearing a child say something, how easy is it for a child to be manipulated to do something? And how should we as adults who are aware of it, how could we help them to process from that?
So there's a lot to unpack there. As far as the victimization for children, it doesn't just have to be, you can expand this out a little bit to include things like sextortion, especially with social media. Someone through social media gets a child to post something online and they're embarrassed and they use it against them. Mm-hmm. And then through that cause them to do other things. And so that opens the door toward prostitution, all kinds of horrible things, where that child abuse and neglect, it all falls right under that. I think the biggest thing for, as far as a parent with their child, is to be really connected and involved. I was really reluctant to let my oldest get on social media, and I was his first friend, right? So I can see everything that's going on and really just try to monitor it and having conversations. It's not that I don't trust you as a child. It's just that this is a big world and a lot of things happen. I want to be those guardrails to help protect and support you. And unrelatedly, you know, if someone posts something in social media, it can come back to bite them 15, 20 years later. So if you have that connection, you can kind of prevent them from doing some self-harm things as well. But to society in general, there are so many things we can do to help. And some of it is just talking about it, creating the conversation, because there are so many people that have no clue that this is going on until it happens to someone they know. And then like, oh my God, where is everyone? Why aren't we doing something now? Mm-hmm. So even if it's sharing a post on social media, you know, sure, share the meme and the TikTok and the flossing dances and all that type of stuff, but share something meaningful as well. You know, at least 1 for 10 or something, right? If you share some toxic things, share something positive. Being involved in politics, because there's so many people that matriculate up to these rule-making decision positions, and they don't have that lived experience, and they don't understand the ramifications of the policy-making decisions that they make. And so they'll promulgate a new rule that just is really bad when you get to the frontline workers that are in the field. And then something else to have a little bit of grace for some of the people that work in the field, because a lot of them are like myself, they're former foster youth that are trying to right wrongs, or they were in a domestic violence relationship and they're trying to right wrongs. So not only are they dealing with their trauma, but also the secondary trauma. So in general, just get informed, right? Get informed, because a lot of us will sit there in armchair quarterback and be judgmental, and we have no basis to do that with because we don't have any information. So the single one thing you could do is pick up a book like this and just get informed and understand. And with that information, try to make positive change.
And I think, yeah, that was good. We need to see ourselves as change agents. And I see you from your story, from your book, from what you do, as out there trying to make a change, being the agent to make a change. And I think when we understand who we are, what we've been called to do, I think it helps to build us into the better person that we want to be. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. 100%. You know, I I'm not as big into sports and stuff, right? You're watching a team on TV and everything. That sounds cool and everything, but I'd rather put on some athletic shoes and go with my kids and go engage. You know, I don't like to live vicariously through people. And so that's why I like being a change agent. Instead of complaining, I have the power to do something about it and I'm going to use my power. I'm not going to squander it. And so I like being active in all those types of ways. And like I said, it helps me connect with my kids, you know, in that same way. None of us in our house will sit and watch sports. We go out and we do sports. I don't sit and complain about the things I don't like. I try to make it, you know, change or get informed, you know what's going on and what can I do to contribute in a positive way.
That's good. So as you were writing, taking the time to process and write through your book, were there any unexpected discoveries that you had about yourself as well when you were, you know, going through this process? Moments of revelation?
Yeah, they're good and bad, right? So again, I engage with you and want to like get this book, and I give myself a goal of 30 days. I'm gonna finish writing the book in 30 days. It doesn't work that way, right? But I force myself to write it, and it wasn't just like putting words on paper. I'm also forcing through very difficult subjects, things I hadn't shared in public. And through that, I realized I was getting really dark and I had a lot of healing to go through. So, and so I took a step away from like 4 to 5 weeks, almost 6 weeks, where I stopped writing. Prior to that, though, I knew I was getting dark and I journaled for like a whole weekend. And that's after reading what I wrote, I was like, hey, I need to take a break for a little bit. It's not okay. But ultimately, I included that as a chapter in the book to let people know that, yeah, it looks like I made it on the outside and I'm doing good. I could check these boxes, but there's that but, right? The scars are still there. They may have faded, but they're still there. And this is how it impacts me. But through that process, I also realized some of the behaviors that I have currently, which are limiting, I was able to look and see what the source is and identify it so I can help process it in today's, in the present. So it helped me realize the depths of the trauma, but also helped me to heal and move past some of the other things. So like, I'm not real big on social media, but I've been able to put myself out there in a very public way, which is difficult for people to do in general. But then I'm talking about these really difficult things. So it's through this process that I was able to have some realizations, like you're saying, in a positive way as well.
That's good. So listen, so we may have the intent to get something done, but as we are dealing with our own self and what's going around us, it's not that it won't get accomplished. It's just that it may take a little bit of time. And I think one of the things you said, Albert, which is so important, is know when to step back. Yeah. Yeah. Really pay attention, because self-care is critical. Our mental stability is so important for us. If the mind isn't right, the body isn't going to be right. The spirit isn't going to be right. We're going to be all over the place. So we got to get our minds focused. So, go ahead. So Albert, did you feel that in that time where you had to step back, what did you do in your step back time?
Everything I could to displace the negativity. So I think, you know, I also did a children's book. So I'm really big on communicating that to children and to.
And what is the name of the children's book, Albert?
So Little One, You Are Loved. And so this is before I followed your three S's, because I wrote this in 2022, put it on Amazon. Everything was great. Nobody knew it existed. And so it wasn't until I started working with you on this book that I started to promote and put that out there. And so, like, for instance, a forensic interviewer reviewed my book. And that to me is amazing, because it's not just a story telling children that you are loved no matter what. And, you know, we can, if we put them in a right environment where they're loved and they're appreciated and we're proud of them, they can grow and they can thrive. it's not just a store to tell kids about that and inform resource providers, but it's also a tool potentially, because a little one goes through some difficult things. And if the right type of practitioner is having this conversation with a child and they start adding details that aren't in the book, then it could be a tool to facilitate a disclosure. So a forensic interviewer that's at a child advocacy center, whenever there's a hotline, she said it could be used as a tool, and she actually got one for the office and stuff. It was an amazing part to be able to do that as well. And I included a copy of it in the back of this book if anyone was looking at it.
You know, I was also thinking about that book. Is a book I could also see, you know, every year, once or twice, the elementary schools have book fairs.
Yeah.
I just went to one with my granddaughter, and I was thinking, I'd like to see some other topics in here. There were some good ones, but I would have loved to have been able to dig through even more. You know, she still walked away with a whole bunch of books, y'all. Yeah. I'm an advocate for reading, but I could see that book also being in that platform. So something to think about.
With anti-bullying and everything, where we're trying to move the needle forward, or the ball forward. It's actually interesting because I was told by some parents that have got this book and read it to their kids who haven't been through adversity to show what it's like to their child for someone that's going through adversity. And I know one in particular, through that conversation, the child disclosed that there was someone in their class that had been adopted. So it was really important for like a parent or someone who's looking after a child because maybe their family's going through something, you know, not like a kinship placement. Not everyone gets removed by the state, right? Sometimes a child will go live with a family member, letting them know that it's going to be some struggles for that child, and they may reach into their chest of coping modalities and choose impenetrable defenses. But if we can get past those barriers and actually work on healing and growth, wonderful things can happen. So,
yeah, I think what you share is so important. And even though this is a great book for practitioners, it is really a good read for all of us to really understand and see some of the dynamics that happen when children are in abusive. And it wasn't just you that were abused, your mother was abused. So there was a lot of different things going on. And children often get to see that what happens to the parent often trickles down to them. And for us to be able to understand that dynamic and be able to look at it clearly and be also informed is important, because we never know. I'm a clinical pastoral counselor also. You never know what type of situations will come before you, and to not have the tools to address it or to be able to send them to the right places, to me is detrimental. It's detrimental to the process.
So that was one of the more difficult things that I had to address, is this concept of learned behaviors. A normal household, a parent, she teaches a child a trade like carpentry or electrical work, or teaches them how to do a sport. One of these houses where you have domestic violence and abuse going on, that's what they're teaching the kids. And so really getting people to understand, like, the child doesn't know the difference between right or wrong because this is their parent. You know, if a child, 3-year-old, falls and scrapes their knee, they're going to turn to their parent for comfort. But if it's that parent that's harming them in the most heinous way, they're still turning to that parent. So how are they supposed to distinguish between these things? And it's not until we could take a step back and look at it from that type of situation that we can begin to break the cycle or stop these generational curses.
And I think that's a good segue into before we begin here, is that there are curses many times in families. There are things that have been passed down through generations. There are habits. There have been learned cultures. There have been traditions that have been established that are not productive, that do not build up, but they tear down. And for us to be able to stop and to pay attention to these things, because we can change the trajectory for someone else. Yeah. It may not have been changed for us when we were a child, but at least as we are moving forward, we can see that we can do something for someone else. So as we begin to get near our close, what I want you to do, Albert, is leave a empowering final thought with everybody, and also let everyone know where you are, where they can find your content, your email address if they want to reach out to you, if you have a bookstore or wherever your book is. I want you to be able to share that.
I appreciate that. Actually, your last thought is probably the most important, is we don't know what we don't know. So like, I share this book with someone from my school, my middle son's elementary school. And after reading it, the thing that stood out to her the most is that there are kids in the school that sometimes say sexually inappropriate things. And those children have been getting in trouble for saying that, like, you shouldn't say that. But after reading the book, now she's saying, where did they even get this vocabulary? So instead of punishing a child who's showing symptoms of probably some horrible things happening at home, now we can actually try to heal and fix and resolve whatever is going on underneath there. So on social media, I'm on. You can find me at Begin the New Cycle through YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. My name is Albert Grief. You can find me through that as well. My children's book, The Story is Free, my middle son read that, and we posted online a story like that. I want to make sure we get out there. So if you know a child that's going through adversity or they're having difficult times, or someone who's trying to open up their forever home for a child, please share that story with them, little one you are loved, and try to get informed. So even if this is a book that doesn't necessarily call to you, share it with someone, because you never know when a person may be able to benefit from it.
So I want to thank Albert Grieve today for giving up his time. We just had a little chat. I always feel blessed to get to talk to him. And so I really consider this a precious time. And I'm hoping that as you have listened into the chat today, that you will really take to heart many of the things that he said, that you will get a copy of the book, The Fear to Persevere, A Practitioner's Review, Surviving Abuse and Domestic Violence. Get a copy of the book. Get a copy for someone else. If you think in your profession this would be a great book, connect it to those people who have the powers to be, to make it happen. We really want to see this book get into colleges, into high schools, to get into churches, because we need it, y'all. There's so many places that this book needs to be. I see those chaplains at the hospital need this book. The chaplains at the prison need this book. A lot of people need this book. So make sure that you get a copy, and you make sure that you get a copy. So go ahead and get two copies, okay? Get one for you and bless somebody else with a copy, and then encourage someone else to listen in. But again, I want to thank Albert. Thank you so much, Albert, for coming in today.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, everybody. Dr. Annette West, this is the chat, but I am the publishing pusher, and I look forward to connecting with you the next time. Bye-bye, everyone. And just let me say, remember, you are blessed to be a blessing, and you are the visible manifestation of His invisible presence. Take care, everybody.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to Dr. Annette's Chat Podcast, brought to you by John A. Publishing. Be sure to stay tuned in for future conversations and engagements. Check out the website, jotnatepublishing.org, and subscribe to this show on your preferred podcast app. Shout out to 95 for the production. Be blessed and be a blessing. Peace.